And gods are very good at accepting those feelings. And for all that humanity asks them for intercession with this crisis or that, it's important when things go well to be thankful, or at least conscious of your good fortune, whether the gods deserve the gratitude or not. We strive so much to achieve these small slivers of balance that it would be a shame not to look around and appreciate them when they happen. "We did it," I said, a tinge of wonder in my voice. "Three druids against a vampire who nearly wiped us out. And we finally got to him. 2,000 years of hiding and waiting and then a lot of maneuvering and blood, but we got him." I turned to the others. "Thank you both for your help."
"Right. Can we feckin' leave this festering shite of a city now?"
Owen asked.
"Yeah,"
Ronuel said.
"Let's get our bruised and battered asses to a green place and stay there for a while."
Well, maybe it wasn't such a great moment for them. They didn't have to live through the 2,000 years to get here. They also couldn't grasp the sheer number of lives lost to Theophilus's war. Only Hal Hauk, I suspect, mattered to them, as he mattered to me. Yet so many others had fallen, and they deserved to be remembered too. So I would do it. And I still had a huge debt to work off for the human's aid, and the Rabbi Yosef Bialik was due some remuneration. But I will pay it all, gladly, and be rid of this old fear. It had shackled my consciousness for so long that I didn't realize how much it weighed until I won free of it.
"Good idea,"
I said, a painful grin spreading my smashed lips.
"I think I like nothing so much as to play with my hound right now."
Epilogue. 3 weeks later, after the winter solstice and the new year, it was such a clear blue day in the Pacific Northwest that I didn't mind the winter chill. Thanks to the new treaty with Leif, Owen would be able to get to the serious business of training apprentices in peace, which included the peace that came with my absence. And since Granuaile, like me, was effectively shielded from divination, Fand and Mananon MacLear wouldn't be able to find us at the new place in Oregon, if that was on their list of things to do. I hadn't heard anything about their recapture and didn't plan to inquire. My plan was to ignore them until I couldn't. Magnuson and Hauk finalized the closing of the property for us and then gave me papers terminating me as a client. The termination saddened me, as did the cause for it. Since I'd never gotten a chance to attend a memorial for Hal, I held my own private one in the woods, shed tears at his passing, and hoped that wherever his spirit was, he would forgive me. But the property, at least, was worth the wait. An isolated spot in the Willamette National Forest, a legacy homestead with a wraparound porch and one of those steep green roofs. There was even a greenhouse for growing herbs in the winter, a new addition to the property that was Granuaile's idea. She had paid for it out of her own funds and said I should consider it a housewarming present and an investment.
"I think you should get back into the tea business," she said upon revealing it to me,
draping her arms around my shoulders and kissing my cheek.
"But do it online this time. Sell your mobility and so on, and we'll ship it."
It made me happy that she was thinking about the long term. The first person plural made me happier. Maybe my worries about us as a couple were unfounded. But, well, doubt is a pernicious, invasive weed in the mind that is nigh impossible to destroy once it germinates. You can pull it out and think it's gone, only to find it growing again after weeks or even days. Not that Granuaile had given me doubts about her fidelity. I'm not particularly jealous in that regard anyway. We are made to enjoy the bodies of other people, and I've long thought it silly to condemn another for acting according to their nature. Passion, though, that's entirely separate from lust. Granuaile is still in her 30s and hasn't lived long enough to know what a slow burn is. So when we first made love after Rome, and it was different than before, damn if doubt didn't sprout in my mind with the speed of a time-lapse video, and wave hello like an improbably cheerful hostess at a steakhouse. The last thing I wanted was Friar Lawrence from Romeo and Juliet in my head, reminding me that these violent delights have violent ends, and in their triumph die, like fire and powder, which, as they kiss, consume. There the bastard was, schooling me as if I were a horny young Montague instead of someone far older than he was. And he kept at it, too, into the next day, until I said aloud, "Hey, fuck you, Friar Lawrence, okay?" And Oberon heard me through our mental link.
"Who are you talking to, Atticus? Do you need me to chew on him?"
No. I was just worried because it was different, and I've had more than my fair share of relationships. I can read the signs, and I'm not ready for it to end. But I also know, from a surfeit of experience, that people outgrow each other, and she still has plenty of growing to do. I can't teach her Polish, so she's been spending lots of time in Poland with the Sisters of the Three Auroras. She already scored a bartending job in Warsaw to get the immersion she needs. And she also spent time monitoring the activities of Thatcher Oil and Gas. I only see her now when she comes home to sleep and on her weekends, which are Mondays and Tuesdays. But it was entirely possible, even probable, that my worries were unfounded and magnified out of proportion by the infamously fragile male ego. Apart from my imagination, she had given me no cause to fear. What I should be doing was the same thing everyone should be doing, enjoying the blessings I have while I have them, instead of worrying that one day they'll be gone. I fought to keep that thought foremost in my mind, rather than the poisonous words of that fucker Friar Lawrence. The pine and Douglas fir lent a crisp scent to the air on a January Monday, and down by the Mackenzie River the air was especially fresh. We took a walk down there with the hounds for what we assured them would be a memorable occasion. "Granuel and I would like to try something," I said to the hounds. My tongue, jaw, and lips had healed to the point where I could speak without impediment. "A new kind of binding, but we need you to be still for a few minutes while we do it."
"No tail wags?" Orla asked. "Hard to stop when I am happy, and I am happy now."
Granuel answered her. "Wagging your tail will not be a problem, but if you could keep the rest still, that would be great."
"Bay, wait a minute," Oberon said. "Is this some kind of trick? Are you guys gonna drop some sausage in front of us and tell us not to move?"
"No, Oberon," I said. "There is no food involved here at all, but we're pretty sure you're gonna like this. Just be patient and enjoy the sun while it lasts, okay?" It was a rare clear day for an Oregon early winter. But in a few hours, a storm system would roll in from the Pacific, and it would get even colder. Oberon and Orla sat down side by side in the grass, tongues lolling out and tails wagging like the happy hounds they were. Granuel and I sat down facing them, legs crossed beneath us. I nodded at her, and we both flipped our vision to the magical spectrum, where we could see the hounds' auras and the bindings that linked their minds to ours. We had long promised the hounds that we would bind them together eventually so that they could hear each other. But since we had never actually done it before, we didn't tell them what we were planning in case it didn't succeed. We began to work on the new binding in tandem, old Irish streaming out of our mouths in almost identical patterns. The only difference was in our targets. I was starting with Oberon and binding his thoughts to Orla, and Granuel was binding Orla to Oberon in turn. For now, they were also connected to us. We'd be able to hear both sides of their conversation, but out of necessity, we would soon give them the equivalent of their own private line, or else we'd constantly hear them chattering when we were trying to sleep or concentrate on something else. When the bindings were complete, no chimes or sirens went off in their heads. They would have to be told the link was there, and then discovered that they could use it. We had agreed to tell Oberon first, and let him be the uncertain one. "Okay, Oberon," I said aloud. "You should be able to talk to Orla now. Go ahead and try it. Think something at her rather than at me.
What? Like now? I mean, do I just say hello? Hello?
Granuaile's hound replied and got to her feet, her entire rear end shaking back and forth in her excitement.
Hey, it's Oberon. I can hear your words. Can you hear me? Hi, Oberon.
Oberon got to his feet, too, every bit as excited.
Oh, yeah! Wow! Hi, Orla!
Hi, this is great!
Yeah, finally! I've been wanting to tell you that I think you're an amazing hound. I knew from the moment I first sniffed your ass that we would get along.
Oh, that's so nice of you to say. I thought the same thing about you.
Oberon reared up on his hind legs and pawed at the air in Orla's direction, and she mirrored his action, as if they were boxers instead of wolfhounds. Then they jumped around in tight little circles.
Oh, wow! Three kinds of cat shit, Orla,
my hound said.
I know I should be saying very impressive things right now, but I'm too happy to think. I just want to run in circles.
Me too. Let's do it.
Really? Okay. You're so perfect.
And then the two of them tore off through the forest, carried away by their joy, leaving Granuaile and me behind, facing the river. We exchanged a glance and laughed at our hounds for a few seconds. And then Granuaile leaned over and kissed me. She pulled away an inch and murmured in a low voice, I knew we'd get along too, you know. Wait, what? Like Oberon knew?
No. But the first time you walked into Rulabula, I just knew. I was attracted on first sight, not first sniff.
Because Lakshya was in your head and told you I was a druid?
No. I saw you first. Lakshya didn't tell me about what you were until later.
Oh, that's a fine salve for my ego. Her lips remained close to mine, and I could smell her strawberry lip gloss. It felt the way it used to again. You still drive me crazy, you know.
Yeah,
she said, smiling.
I know.
And then we broke our eavesdropping link to our hounds so that they could enjoy their privacy. And we enjoyed some privacy of our own, right there on the riverbank, not caring in the least how chilly it was outside. There was bliss for a few days. They were the kind of carefree days you dream of having someday, the kind of days you spend most of your life working and suffering for. And then Orla came into heat, and the hounds disappeared into the woods for long periods, until one night they sat us down by the fireplace for a very serious talk.
Atticus, and the other girl, we have been discussing this for a while, and we think you should know something,
Oberon said.
Yes, Orla added. This is a very important thing. Are you paying attention?
Granuaile and I assured them that they had our full attention.
I'm pregnant,
Orla gushed.
That means you're gonna need to buy a lot more sausage,
Oberon explained. We both clapped and squeed and gave them hugs.
This is fabulous news,
Granuaile said.
Yes, indeed. I think we should celebrate, I said. Oberon, I never did goulash you when we were in Prague. Let's all go get goulashed!
Granuaile and Orla didn't know what that was all about, but they got on board with the idea quickly enough. I've decided that apart from the herb greenhouse, I'm gonna plant a flower garden around the cabin and keep some bees. The puppies should be here in time to play around in the spring blossoms. They'll be simply adorable. And harmony will have found us. This is Luke Daniels. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Staked by Kevin Hearn. This program was directed by Troy Odie. Executive producer Dan Zitt. Text copyright 2016 by Kevin Hearn. Production copyright 2016 Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.